it's our... It's
game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Welcome back to the Gamers Haven podcast. This is, of course, Ethan, Nathan, and Jeremy. And we are coming to you, of course, over the interwebs on this Friday, September 17th. Is it really that late in September already?
Yes it is.
Man.
The month is over, half over.
Gen Con's over a month ago now, and man, those sort of things happen.
But as you guys can hear, one of Jeremy's experiments went horribly awry, and,
yes.
And our wonderful underground lair is now a swamp.
Well, part of it is a swamp, yeah, and oddly, the wildlife came with it. It's kind of strange. I'm thinking he was doing some sort of dimensional research.
Or that, what was that thing in the Star Trek II movie, The Genesis?
Oh, Jeremy, were you developing another Genesis torpedo?
Yes. God. I already launched it.
Where did you launch it?
Here.
Here? Jeremy, you're supposed to launch it at our enemies.
In the kitchen.
Why did you launch it in the kitchen?
That would explain where all the animals came from.
That would, yeah. And why Spock is over there, you know, wandering about. Anyway, what are we talking about today, Jeremy? We're building a world, aren't we?
I don't know. You ask these questions.
Hence the
Genesis.
We are going to do Dawn of Worlds.
Yes, not to be mistaken with Dawn of War.
Most likely a multi-part
probably.
Series here. This is part one.
Draw.
So
we need some dice. Parts.
We need dice and we need various things. And I think what we want to do tonight is sort of focus on what the rules are, right? And sort of go over.
And if we can, we'll get it started.
Get it started. All right. And it's Dawn of Worlds.
Legends presents
Dawn of.
Dawn of Worlds is at, let's see, clanwebsite.org.
Add an echo up there.
And I will try to put a, I won't try. I will put a link to it in the show notes. So, but it's a new method. It's a different, well, what is Dawn of Worlds before we get too far?
It's basically a interactive, storyteller role-playing game where you basically get together and you are the gods of a brand new cosmos. You don't have to pick a particular god. You're
sure.
Kind of just a creator entity. And it is broken down between different periods of time, starting with creation. And the creation of the world takes place in rounds, and each player gets to go
dice.
In a round.
You would ask me for dice, and I have no idea where my dice are. What kind of dice do we need?
2 6-sided. There should be a whole crap load of 6-sided dice in this house.
There is. The question is,
I have an app for that.
I do too.
So anyway, that is what we are going to be dealing with
basically
today.
Basically, just through creation and
butt D6s.
After 10 rounds, the age may shift as soon as any one player wishes it to. And each age must last a minimum of 5 rounds.
5 rounds. All right.
Minimum.
Well, we'll have to get an overview and sort of talk a bit about the rules here when we come back.
Here are the nastiest, ugliest looking D6s I have that actually roll quite
excellent.
Well.
Excellent. So I guess with that, we will be back after this.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
And we are back, and as we said in the intro today, we are talking about
Dawn of Worlds.
We're building a world.
You have to do it in some omnipotent godlike voice.
Dawn of Worlds. I feel like I am Devourer of Worlds.
Or Populous.
Yes, or something like that.
Oh, that reminds me. I read an article on the new Civ 5.
Yeah.
I made a mistake of reading that.
He's played it.
You've played it?
Yeah.
Like it? Don't like it?
I want it.
We will,
really,
we will
really
have
bad.
Many a sleepless night of it, apparently.
I want it.
It looks sweet.
I want it really, really bad. Like, bad enough to sell my liver to get it.
You only need one.
But I've only got one, but it'd be worth,
damn it.
It would be worth having Civ 5 for, like, the
then.
10 minutes.
Yeah, all right.
That's true.
Well,
but it is so cool.
Speaking of civilization, we are going to be building a civilization.
We're building a world. A world and possibly a cosmo.
Cosmology type of thing. Cosmos?
Cosmo.
Cosmo.
A cosmography.
Like the magazine.
We are the gods. We can name it whatever
we want. That is true. Okay, so you are the god of Cosmo.
At least I'll
Jeremy,
be dressed well.
Jeremy is the one who found this Dawn of Worlds thing. And of course,
Dawn of Worlds.
Thank you for the sound effects.
You gotta add the echo.
Okay, Dawn of Worlds, Worlds.
Don't you have an echo program?
I do. That would require me to do more editing, and I'm not gonna do it. Now,
the hell with that.
Let's see. At this point, Jeremy, why don't you tell us what Dawn of Worlds, about the whole Dawn of Worlds thing, and what we're gonna be doing tonight.
Whatever we can get to tonight, but just a moment. We are lagging.
Okay, Jeremy is lagging.
Man, we just upgraded his computer. He's still lagging?
Yeah.
What section do we need to be on?
Alright, so, basically, as I stated earlier, we will be the gods of our own fantasy world.
Is that a good thing?
I don't know.
Probably not, but we'll do it anyway.
Now,
some of the worst things that come from the best intentions.
Is the basic idea is this. Us will gather around, as they say, a wide flat surface, because the world will be flat, obviously.
Okay, obviously the world is flat. We need
that ancient archaic. Well, here, let's do this. Because we can.
And we recommend a table. You'll need at least one large sheet of paper, several smaller ones, pencils, and a pair of six-sided dice. And whoever is leading the process will probably be expected to provide a large sheet of paper.
Okay.
On this, he should draw the rough outline of a landmass. Don't draw a crappy landmass.
So you want me to do it, or?
Sure.
Hang on a second, guys. I got a table for us.
Well, here we go. We're moving crap already. All right. We're going to pause for station identification. Not really.
Soon, each player will be playing God.
Oh, goody. I've always wanted to play God.
Usually, you do not need to take on...
Like, blame it on the fact that the nurses, like, drop the marks stuff.
And we have colored pencils.
Yes, I've also got additional ones.
Wrong kind of God.
Right.
Does somebody
We are gods who play with Crayola.
Sweet.
Somebody have a ruler?
No.
Yes, I have a ruler.
Okay.
I have a ruler at home.
We at least need a ruler to look at.
I have a ruler.
Okay. Now.
I just gotta go get it.
Even gods have limits. Every round, each player takes a turn, having the opportunity to make changes to the world.
Okay.
Each player will receive points every round, and these points represent the power that they have to expand or expend on shaping the world. Points can sometimes be saved up over several turns to do something really dramatic.
Okay.
Each age, which the first age will be creation, each age is has to last at least 5 rounds. By the 10th round, though, okay. Basically, at 5 rounds, mm-hmm. if all the players are okay with it, it can move on.
Mm-hmm.
If not, it can go up to 10 rounds, and then one player can say, I want to move on, and it'll move on to the next age. The first age is focused on geography.
Here is our world table.
Each round in the first age is roughly equal to 500 years.
Okay.
Well, creation takes millions of years.
Not in Kansas.
We're in Kansas.
Oh, right. Creation took less than...
So this world is being intelligently designed.
So on the seventh day we'll rest?
Yes.
Or do you want me to just...
On the seventh day we will rest.
You want me to draw it?
Sure.
Yes, why don't you go ahead and do the honors, Jeremy?
We're going to have a blob right here. And we're going to have another continent blob.
We'll, of course, be taking take a picture of this stuff as we go along.
This should have, like, a semi-attached continent down here.
Okay. Then blobs in.
Look, it's Atlantis!
There's a little blob here.
All right.
And then you want
to... Essentially, what Jeremy, you need to dictate what you're doing.
I'm drawing! I don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that?
You can create one.
Where?
You can create one when we get to that.
Right. Wait. What?
North Pole.
North Pole Bomb.
And a South Pole.
South Pole Bomb.
Thank you for your OCD, Nathan. Now,
let's flip it over so the north is on the south. Because it's a, what is that called? Not a polar shift.
It's a magnetic pole
field
shift.
Yeah.
Magnetic okay.
Field put.
Is that part of the rule? Shift.
Yeah, it is now.
Okay. So
all
we
right.
We have drawn out a world map now.
Did you type that out? Did you put that on there?
Type what?
On that sheet.
We have like 6 continents.
Now this needs to go turn one, player is you.
I'm one player, yeah.
Okay. And what happened? What are we doing?
Well, okay.
The god Vocarius created the lands.
Well, first what we'll do is we'll just roll for our points.
Don't we use D6s? 2D6s?
Yep.
Why don't you just use a real set of dice?
Because you only have one set.
Oh, please, dear god, Jeremy. I play
house.
Warhammer and Star Wars.
Only one set
so
of
they're
going
to roll low at Warhammer dice.
Actually, no, they're my black dice of doom, which, as you know, roll horribly high.
Until you need them to roll things.
Yeah. And then they're like...
Historically, they're like...
No, it's funny. Whenever I'm playing the army I want to play that night, they roll great. When I play a secondary
army...
Okay,
so we've established that the magnetic north actually points south?
Yeah. The poles have flipped.
Sure, why not?
This world is an old world, and the poles have shifted.
And when we say old, we mean new. All right, so I've got 6 points.
I got 8.
All right, keep that in mind. Did you roll?
Here. What kind of dice do you want?
I don't care. D6s would be great.
And if you go to page 7...
All right, I get a mighty 6.
If you go to page 7, it gives a list of... what the different powers you can do and in the cost. So, to shape land, 1 inch of land, roughly, is 3 points in this age. To shape climate, roughly 1 inch, is 2 points. To create a race is 22 points. Create a sub-race, well, you have to have a race, obviously. Command the race, so on.
We don't have enough points between all of us to create a race.
Right. Well, this is the land building, because right now they're just blank pieces of land.
Well, there's our ruler.
Yeah. Though they do say be fairly rough about your inches. Because, well.
Okay.
So player one created the continents, I created the poles. So it's now player three's turn.
You don't have to count that as an actual turn. You can go first if you would like.
No, you go first.
Okay. Jeremy, you're going first.
Bye.
Jeremy, turn one. What do you do?
What is your god name?
So
my name is Jeremy, and
Jeremy,
I am not an alcoholic.
He is not an alcoholic. Jeremy, not alcoholic.
That's an interesting god name.
Jeremy, not alcoholic. What does the great Jeremy, not alcoholic, do during this phase?
Well, I have 6 points, so I'm going to create a mountain range.
Okay.
2 inches of mountains. Why? Because I want to.
Just mark the middle. Crazy.
You say this list is on page 7, right?
Check out that volcano. That's awesome.
So I've just burned off my points in this round to create mountains.
Okay.
Tim the Mighty creates
hang on. Don the Alcoholic formed mountains.
I'm going to form mountains too. I'm going to spend 3 points, though,
and
give 3 inches.
And really quickly.
Nathan!
I'm going to put my initials on this.
Formed. Are we naming the mountains yet, or are they just mountains?
They're just mountains right now. No, there's a giant godly JP on it.
I'm going to create mountains along the spine of this continent right here. I'm going to do 3 inches of them. So from here...
So he can only do one action, and this is...
It depends on the points.
Right, but he spent 6 points, and now he has 2 points left.
I have 8 points, and I spent 3, so I have 5. Jeremy spent 2 points...
No, Shape of Land is 3.
Oh.
I spent 6 points to do 2 inches.
Oh, so
okay.
No, I can do 2.5.
I see.
Right. It's not really... I mean, if you had a billion points, which you won't, you could do everything on there for
woo-hoo! Okay, so I see First Age, land.
Land is cheaper in the First Age.
I see you can Shape Land at 3 points per an
you
inch.
Can do
shape Climate
everything.
At 1 inch for 2 points.
Yep.
Race for 22 points. Create a sub-race for 12 points. Command race. What's the command stuff?
Okay, command stuff won't really matter right now because we don't have any races.
Okay.
But if you want a race to do something like, hey, I would like my flying monkey heads to invade...
And I see you have to have an avatar to order
to
do stuff like that. Okay.
So I've created a 2.5-inch long mountain range because that's all the points I have. I spent my 8 points.
Okay, so you spent your 8 points. 8 points. Now it is my lovely turn.
So I think I spent 7.5.
I am Ethan, Lord of Evil. And I am, let me see, I have 6 mighty points because I rolled a 6, right? So I get 6 points. I'm gonna do 3 inches of climate.
Okay.
Alright.
Climate. How do you climb it? It might be rainy in an area, or it might be desert.
A desert plain.
Yeah, you could do that.
Okay.
How is a river classified? Is that terrain? Or?
No, it's basically 2 inches. So, I could do 2 inches here? Is it their width? Or is it 2 inches square?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
You're a god.
I'm a god. All
don't
right.
be picky. Stop being picky. Now, the nice thing is players who end any turn with 5 or fewer points...
There's a desert up here.
All right. See, that works as planned.
That's awesome.
The world's end desert. Wait, that's probably copyrighted by Disney.
There's a desert on that peninsula.
All right.
Gigantic phallic peninsula there. So it's a dry ew.
It's a dry
phallic.
Phallic peninsula.
That's how awesome.
That's
we
vast.
Are.
It's
yes.
a vast
okay.
giant. Okay. So that's what you did. You created a desert on the phallic peninsula.
And
that's
so,
vast.
And so now everyone at the end of the turn ended their turn with less than 5 points.
Get
what happens?
We
roll again?
We all roll again, but everybody who had less than 5 points get a plus one
as we go
for this round. So, hey, I rolled a 3, so with my plus one, I get 4 points.
So I get a roll and get
everybody
a plus
gets to roll because we are all under 5.
I get a 4, 5, 6, 7, so I have an 8.
Right.
I got a 9.
All right.
Why am I getting all the points? I don't know how to make any of this
crap.
Shut up.
But now it's Jeremy's turn again, right?
Yes, and I'm going to not do anything and save my points.
I want to make a river.
All right.
Say you've banked yourself how many points?
4.
So shape land would be shaping. It would be a shape land, right?
Yeah.
To make
shape,
a river.
If you scroll down, shape land. This power directs the creation, modification of, or erosion of mountains, hills, lakes, streams, rivers, forests, jungles, deserts, grasslands, tundra, steppes, and other forms. Now, climate. This power directs weather patterns that are frequent in a rough area. You didn't necessarily create a desert, but you created the climate.
I created
for
a big
desert.
Arid area.
Right.
Arid and dry.
I'm going to create, because it's the distance is 2 inches, I'm going to create a river that runs from the mountains I created down to this gulf.
Okay.
So it's 2 inches from the mountain range. So.
And you're, what are you doing? You're creating.
I'm creating a river.
And you can name stuff if you want.
Created a river, and how many points are you spending?
2 inches, which is 6 points. As is typical with rivers that run to a gulf.
So you still have 3 points left.
6 points. I rolled a 9 plus 1 would be 10.
Oh, so
I had less
10 points.
So I have 4 points left.
4 points.
But as is typical for a river that runs to a gulf, it's got a big old gigantic. There's my river.
I have 8 points. What's create order?
Create order. We will look, because I don't remember.
Gosh,
create race. Man city. Create order. By this power, the god creates an order of people within a civilization.
Okay.
It's like where you create your actual political
and religious. So there has to be an
religious,
actual civilization first. So
you need to have people.
I need to have people to do that.
And right now, we still have plenty of blank continents.
Yes,
so Jeremy's saving his points.
But it's still Ethan's turn. Yeah.
But can I do two different things, like shape land and shape?
You can, as long as you have points. It's very early open.
Okie dokie.
I thought I could only do one thing.
Nope. You can do. If you want to spend points up the wazoo, it's basically you're a god, so if you want to shoot your godly juice in one shot, you go for it.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and
blow your godly load in one shot.
6 points.
I said juice. You said load.
And actually make
this is going downhill.
Make this a desert.
Okay, so now it's an arid desert.
And then I have 2 points left over for more climate.
If you want.
And I'm going to make it on this little island over here all nice and snowy.
Ooh.
It's cold.
We should probably use white for that. Do we have white? We don't have white, do we?
No, of course not.
Yeah, that looks like ice.
There's
which is creepy, because once the natural things take over, it, who cares? So next round, anybody who's under 5 now gets plus 1 per turn. So anybody who's under 5 gets a plus 2.
And I had 4, you had
4.
Mm-hmm. Ethan had
none,
so...
So we all get whatever we roll, plus 2. But it's going to max out at plus 3, no matter what.
I got a 12.
All right, so I got a 7.
Plus
so 9. So 13.
I get an 11, 12, 13.
I got 10 plus 2, so I got 12.
All right.
Plus my 4 is 16.
Right.
And so it would be...
13.
Jeremy, not alcoholic, turn.
I can almost create a race. But I'm having fun, creating mountains and rivers and stuff.
Each age is what, 10 rounds, you said?
Okay.
What?
At five, we can all vote to see if we move it.
And we're on
whatever turn you're keeping track.
We're on turn 3.
I'm going to create...
A forest?
Yeah. More mountains. I'm going to do...
Jeremy is creating more mountains.
mountains that span across the...
Yes, we're taking pictures. Actually, Becca is taking pictures.
He's writing his name.
In mountains.
Sweet.
So I'm spending 9 points.
So there's a mountain range that says Jeremy was here.
Alright.
Which kind of always, you know, erode, so future generations will be.
How
that.
Many points are you saving then? Is that all your points?
I just spent 9, so I got 4 left.
Saving 4 points.
And actually, I'm gonna save him. Because that's how I roll.
Alright, Nathan, what are you doing?
I'm gonna create 2 inches of forest, which is 6 points.
I'm going to create it up here, opposite of your arid desert. I'm going to create a forest over here.
On the other island, or okay, on the other phallic peninsula, right.
Yeah, that's from here.
I know, by definition, peninsulas are phallic. So
from here...
I'm surprised you haven't raised the land between the two of them, so they're connecting.
I didn't know I could do that.
Yeah, that would be shaped land.
So there's tons of forest here.
Don't limit yourself too much.
So that's 6 points. So I have 10 points left. So theoretically, I could raise the land, which would be 3 inches of land.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to raise 3 inches of land, which is going to burn another 6 points. So I burn 12 points up 16, which gives me 4 points left. And I'm going to create a land bridge that goes from this continent to this continent.
So how many points are you saving now?
4. Just like Jeremy, actually.
And now we have a land bridge.
Okay, I have
right so, because I thought it would look cool that way.
That's fine.
It's time to use markers.
Why?
It's probably not coming up really
well. Once we finalize it, we'll take better pictures.
Okay. But
the whole point of this is to get people thinking about their...
I'm saving my 13 points.
Ethan wants to make a race.
Jackass.
Hey, no, it's a good idea. Someone needs
Deal
to create
with
a
it.
Race.
Turn
someone,
4.
Someone needs to create a race, otherwise we won't have any.
That's why there's second age. The second age is the age of races. Okay, so we're under 5.
I just get my rolls.
Yeah.
3, 4. So I get 4 more points.
Okay. I get 9.
6, 10. Or, sorry, 9.
I get 9 plus 4 is 13.
So I'm back to 13. All right. Well, I am going to create a forest.
Jeremy is creating a forest. I know this is great radio.
He's actually, it's kind of cool, the forest surrounds the mountain, so the mountains jut up out of the forest in the middle of this island.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And just because it's going to be a little bit, we're going to kind of not really create anymore, we're just going to kind of give these an age. So, what is that, 6 points? No, 9 points. 9 points.
So he's got 4 points left again.
And I'm going to spend 3.
Creating a river? There's a river that comes out of the forest. It's tainted.
Must be.
Big river.
There we go. That was...
All right. And how many points did you spend?
You spent...
All but 1.
All but 1.
Which would be?
1.
Yeah, he spent 12 points.
I spent 12. I had 13. 1 equal.
All right. Nathan, what are you doing?
I don't know. I made forest last turn and created an isthmus between or a land bridge between two continents. I think I'm good for this turn. I think I'm going to hold off this turn because I did stuff last turn.
How many points are you saving now?
14. Oh. Or 13. No, I have 13 because I got 6
right.
Plus 3, which is 9, plus 4 is 13.
Math is hard for people with low intelligence like me.
We don't have enough. The terrain! The land is blank.
Okay, I'm saving my 17 points. Jeremy, it's turn 5.
hate you. Okay, with the plus 3, I have 9, so I have 10 points altogether.
Woo! I rolled a 3.
I got a 7.
Sweet.
So I have 20 points.
So do I.
So what kind of race are you going to create?
I don't know yet. Thinking. The Ancient Ones is what I'm creating.
The Amorphous. Strange. Always ever shifting.
What are you creating there, Jeremy?
Giant Ravine.
The continent was damaged by a giant meteor, which created the giant gully.
It's to keep the rough...
desert people? I'm not going to say what that looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremy, you're terrible.
I didn't mean to. But I'm going to write on it, it's a ravine. Crevice. It's a crevice.
Okay,
crevice
ravine. How many points did you just spend?
All but 1.
I had 10, so 9.
You did 3 inches.
Your turn, Nathan.
I'm going to save my points so I can get those 2 extra points. I want to make a race.
Yeah.
Well, you okay, so how many points are you saving now?
20.
You have 20.
Excuse me.
I'm creating a race of hawk people.
You have 22 points? I thought you had 20.
Oh, create race. Oh.
22 points.
20. Oh. What's an event?
Event. Events are things that happen. Through this power come the change of fortunes for an avatar, order, city, or civilization. A gold mine may be found. A storm at sea may strike a fleet. Or avatar may escape death, plague, famine, drought may strike, or technologies may be lost. These are great unplanned winds of fortune that blow through history. So basically, if you want to save a race, if you want to destroy... or try to destroy a race in something horrible. Now, even if you destroy a race, though, it's assumed that some of them survive.
Basically, it makes a shattered race.
Yeah, and there's not really enough to... Yeah.
Okay.
In the garage,
then I will spend some points creating a big land bridge across the ravine.
Dang it! Gotta keep that pesky desert over there. I don't know why. Don't really care.
There's a natural land bridge across the ravine. And then I'm saving my 17 points. Now it's turn 5, so we take a vote. I say we continue.
I say we continue as well.
Or else it's gonna be a very bland world. And I think Jeremy's going to stab us.
I'm going to stick with continuing to this particular age.
Yes. Well, I just got 11 points.
Well, that's 7 plus 3, so...
I got 5, so I've got 25.
So I am at 10.
All right, and what are you doing this turn, Jeremy?
I'm going to do another inch of river, roughly. So the river goes to the sea. That's 3...
What are you making?
6, so it's gonna be 9. This is like fertile grassland.
Oh, so it's a plains.
Kind of. It's basically.
It's the plains of Rohan.
Yeah.
The plains of Rohan? No, it's not the plains of Rohan.
It's fertile.
That's just silly.
It's fertile.
All right, Nathan. It's you, man.
And so that means I have 1 point left.
Okay.
I'm going to burn 22 points to create a race.
So is that's all you did, and then what did you do, Jeremy? You created
fertile plains.
Yeah, I created, finished the river, and then created fertile plains.
How many points did you spend?
9.
Spent 9.
So I have 1 left. So when you create a race, this power of... affects the creation of one of the traditional races for player characters in your game system or other classic fantasy races. races and civilizations are often interchangeable. You may, for example, have more than one race of dwarves, each with their own unique civilization. Consider not only humans, elves, dwarves, orcs, and trolls, but also dragons, halflings, and even leprechauns. We're not really worrying about that. Each race must be given a starting point in the world where they begin to build their civilization. Races start either neutral or aligned, one good or minus one evil.
Hailing from the rivers on the southeastern continent is a race of frog-like men, anthropomorphic froglocks. They live along this river here. I'm going to draw little huts.
You might want to write down frog people.
Okay, frog Nathan groups, created frog people in huts.
Living along the river. They are lined neutral.
Well, yeah, put down neutral.
They start neutral?
Yeah. Well, no, they can be either neutral, plus one good, or minus one evil.
Okay.
They can, I don't remember what is bullywugs. They're basically bullywugs.
Okay. Go with it. Yeah. So, yeah, frog locks.
Frog locks. They're frog people. They live along the river. They are
so
neutrally
at the
aligned.
Beginning of
so that's
time.
That's what? That's 22 points?
Yeah. And I have 3 points left.
The beginning of time, that's, frog people went.
You doing anything with those three
yes.
points?
Those 3 points. I am going to build another inch of mountains off this. I'm going to expand this range of mountains. Another inch. About a centimeter. An inch. As they continue up the spine of the mountain, of this continent.
Becca, would you be nice enough to get me some water? Because I can't get over there.
What, would you like a soda?
No.
Not even a diet?
No.
All right.
There we go. So I created a race and an inch of mountains, which expends all of my 25 points that I had.
Okay. I am creating a evil race of hawk people. Because I am Ethan, Lord of Evil.
You could still create a good
I am
race.
Ethan, Lord of Evil.
I'm
creating an
evil race. I'm neutral.
Go away, super bug. You're not part of my world. Go away.
Like, oh god, the humanity!
Yes, so I'm creating an evil race of hawk people that live in aviaries of doom.
Above the desert?
In the desert.
As their god, are you going to write that down? Are they going to be aviaries of doom?
This would be one that we really should be recording with the camcorder.
Well, the thing is, if we like how this turns out, we'll do a more serious one.
Well, actually, this is actually looking pretty good. What we should do is, after we finish this, is one of us should, roughen up the edges and make the continents more like real continents and stuff, and
yes, yes.
and flesh it out.
All right, and then I use 4 points to make them even more evil.
Ah, so now they're evil
plus two.
Two. So they're more evil. They are meevil.
Meevil. Evil. So I only get plus one because I spent my last turn. I had more than 5 points, right?
So yeah.
Or does it go back to plus three because I've already had several
no,
turns?
It's whatever the turn we're on. Uh-huh. You get that plus. So right now it's going to be plus three no matter what.
Okay.
All right. So now
I said
I
we
have
continue.
2 points, so I just roll and do I get any bonuses then this time?
Yeah, plus three.
Yeah, because we only have you only have right. 2 points. I've
I
only got one point. So.
No, I get 9 more points.
9, so 12. I have 12.
I have 11. Alright, Jeremy, not alcoholic, what do you do?
I'm going to change my god name at some point.
For free!
We're still in the first age, okay.
With my 12 points, I'm going to create a sub-race of frog people.
Cool!
They're
more...
No. They live over here.
On the other side of the river.
well,
the river split them up. Split the race.
Well, your race looks like they're more on the sides of the sea. Uh-huh. This sub race of frog people, we'll call them
Bullywood?
Tadlocks.
Tadlocks.
The Tadlocks actually live in the river.
Whereas the froglocks live on the shore. On the
Tadlocks.
And they live in
the frogmen.
They live in the river. They live in the delta, the fertile delta plains of the river.
And they are actually going to be also neutral.
Sweet.
So basically some frog folk went down there and then jumped in the water. And
basically evolved tails so they could live in the water.
Now, they do breathe air, but they mostly stay in
the water. You spent 12 points.
That's all you've got.
Okay, Nathan.
I'm going to spend all 12 of my points growing this mountain range 4 inches. My goal is to make this mountain range go all the way up the spine of this continent. Where's the black pencil? I am sad.
Black pencil though. Is it right here? It's right here. That black one?
Yeah.
It goes from here. I think we probably at this point have lost our studio audience, but that's okay!
I don't know, I haven't checked. No, we have, in fact, our loyal ones, Noah and, of course, Noah and Tracy are in there.
Ask Noah and Tracy what they would like me to create next.
What? Well, you just did.
Well, what do they say?
I don't know. It depends on if they're listening. I need to figure out what I'm going to do with my 11 points, I suppose.
You should corrupt them further.
I could.
Massive range of mountains with very large.
Make them so vile that they eat their own children.
The race dies out because it never procreates because they're cannibals.
No, part of it is as they eat their children, they gain more power.
Yeah, only the strong survive. Meow. Meow. What do you want, Psycho?
I don't know. I just want attention. Some of our continents are still looking pretty.
I know. I'm going to start focusing on this continent next. Because I made that mountain range as long as I wanted it. Now you can do all sorts of rivers and...
Okay, and crazy I'm going to take my 11 points, spend 8 of them to make them even more, 2 more steps evil.
Well, remember, you can only do it once per turn.
Oh, right. So
only one step.
I will do that.
So they are definitely meevil now.
Yes, they're even more meevil.
They're veevil, very evil.
They're meevil. And then I'm spending some points to create... more mountains on this side to protect them more. Let's see.
So there's mountains along the land bridge. Remember, when it's roughly 1 inch, that's run at 1 inch diameter too. So it's 1 inch out.
Yeah, we haven't been really expanding enough. Like some of our mountains are kind of on the small side.
There we go.
Sure.
There are mountains on that
land. Look at it. He's set right by the counter.
Giant mountains of obsidian.
Yes.
All right. So you put down that they're now meevil more. They're meevil.
They're meevil. I like that. That's...
Oh!
Alright.
I rolled an 11.
Cool. I rolled a 3.
Damn, that sucks.
Okay. They say a volcano in the middle of the frog people. That's what Tracy has said.
What, does he not like frog people?
Apparently he likes cooked frog people.
Well, I can create a volcano, but being in the middle of the frog people would entail creating a mountain. So there is a mountain that they worship nearby.
Frog legs.
The great maw. Or the gaping.
Do they sacrifice to it?
Yeah, probably.
Well, they are neutral. So it's an inch.
So it's one giant.
It's a massive volcano.
Yeah. So that was 3 points. So far. And then over here, there's another...
I got 14 points. What can I do?
And then what else are you doing, Jeremy? More mountains?
Creating another kind of mountain that looks almost like a fortress. It really isn't, but it kind of looks like one. So
So another inch, so that's three more points, so six. And then...
and then a river.
And then a river. So that would be three more, so that's nine. I've got 2 points left. I can shape climate. So
you created these mountains here.
Those mountains and this river.
We're taking pictures as we go along as this world is created.
There's the new mountain range you created with the fortress, and then there's the mountain range with the river.
There we go.
And because of the warm air hitting the cool air, this area
is constantly perpetually rainy?
No, but it gets a nice pleasant rain that blows across.
Which helps, which actually helps create irritate. These verdant
yeah.
plains.
Yep.
Huh.
So, good climate. Now, kinda.
Yeah, lightly blew it. That's good.
All right, Nathan, what are you doing?
Well, I have 14 points. I'm going to take a picture of this real quick.
You don't want to do another sub-race of frog people?
No.
The ones that live on the volcano?
That live under the volcano. They're like what are those?
They're volcano frogs.
No, I was thinking, you know, the things in the time machine. H.G. Wells,
oh,
the time
God,
machine.
Yeah, those things are horrible.
Yeah. Those are still scary. Those were scary when I was a kid when I watched that movie. What was it, like, something locks?
I don't even know what they were. They
started
Morlocks.
With Morlocks.
Were
thank
they?
You. Yeah, that was a creepy-ass thing. I'm going to start on this continent up here.
Okay.
And I'm going to start. I'm just going to go right in the middle of the mount, of the island.
We might want to draw a little bit more on this forest. Cause
yeah, here, let's start it up a little bit.
All right, so Nathan, you are drawing onto a forest, I see.
Well, I was darkening
he's
the forest.
He's just darkening it. Okay. He comes okay. down and he paints it a little bit more.
Here in the middle of the island is, or in the middle of this island is an inch range of mountains that sprung up. And it's a vast granite style range of mountains, very sharp peaks, but it's very, you know, circular in distribution. So that's 1 inch, that's three. Coming off of that in two different directions, going an inch south, an inch and a half south, is a river that feeds out into the sea, creating.
Okay, creating a river to the sea.
Heading south. And then heading west from the mountains is another inch and a half. So that's 3 inches, which is 9 points. Which, including that, is 12. So I've spent 12 out of the 14 points I have, and I think that'll be good. So I created two river ranges, or two rivers, and one mountain.
Okay, 9. In my action.
Here we go.
Because
I'm just crazy like that.
At the end of this river here, one thing I'm going to be doing is creating a big lake.
Yeah, there's no lakes.
I haven't gotten that far yet.
There's a big lake there. In fact, all I'm doing this turn is making lakes. So there's a whole bunch of other lakes in here.
That's a cool idea.
Now, if I wanted to create a floating mountain, should I use shape land or event?
I think that would be an event, as what would happen is at some point in time, something so cataclysmically happened that it hit, like, one of the mountains, like, say, a giant asteroid, and it broke.
Oh, no, I just want to create a mountain that hovers. I'll spend the 10 points once if I get to it.
It would be an event, because something would have to happen to actually make that mountain
you know. A huge
lake. What happened is God said,
this one.
Fly.
The Great Lake.
A Great Lake?
The Great Lake. Why do they call it the Great Lake? I don't know.
Because it's great.
It's
massive!
Even Great Lakes.
So I have... I've got 2 points left.
All right. What turn are we on?
Damn!
We're on turn 9.
Okay.
That's another 11.
All right. Well, I got 6, so 9 points.
Got 14 plus 2 is 6. I got 16 points.
5.
Maybe you should use the black dice of death. They seem to be rolling really well for me.
I'm actually back to where I was last turn, so... Okay.
More mountain ranges at the... So this is like basically like in the middle of this is a range where there's
one higher than
like plains or something in between the mountain ranges.
Just darkening it.
I made it so pretty too.
Well, I made it ugly. So there's 3.
12 points this turn. What's Jeremy? What are you doing?
I created a mountain range
and a forest.
Yeah. Mountain range or forest?
36, fine. Yep, there it is. That's my 9 points, because the forest was kind of bigger than I...
Well, technically, if you did 3 inches, it needs to go out, too.
Well,
so.
Then I'll put another inch over here.
Because you use 3 inches wide, but you're only an inch...
Right,
3 inches long, but only an inch wide.
And we need to keep it pretty loose, so... Yeah. All right. Burned off all my points.
Well, I have 16. I'm going to hold off this round, watch what you guys do, decide what I want to do next round.
14 points?
I have 16. I rolled an 11, 16, plus 3 is 14, plus the 2 points I saved, which is 16. So.
I can't type!
That's okay, neither can I. That's why I'm not keeping track.
I don't know how it came to me to be.
Now you can
because
still shape land later on, it just gets more expensive.
Very, very expensive.
Well, not as expensive as races are right now.
Yes.
But still expensive.
Yes, races get way cheap next round.
But they do that, I think, because you're not going to always have, like, you know, rivers and stuff.
I'm going to be creating 4 more inches of some land type. Let's see. We need some more lakes. Because I love lakes. More lakes!
This island up here could use a couple lakes. A couple small ones. I think of it this way. If it's 1 inch diameter, that's a lot of lakes.
Yeah,
it
allows you to a lot of...
So, you know, make some lakes like off the river tributaries and stuff that feed into lakes and stuff. That would be cool. Brackish. That would be a brackish water lake because it's right on the coast. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we don't know if our ocean is freshwater, saltwater.
We don't know that yet.
No, we haven't
decided.
We haven't decided. We'll decide when the first intelligent race, tastes it.
A lock on the land.
On the land bridge. There's a lock that runs from one side. It cuts the land bridge.
Yeah, because the land is kind of low there.
Yeah, well, it would be between 2 mountain ranges.
All right.
That's actually kind of realistic.
I think I have a little bit more space left.
Oh, yeah. A little? No, more than that. Because you've done maybe 2 inches of lakes.
I am the lake god right now.
Like, they must have water to drink if my evil races are to dominate the world. Right? Look, it's Lake Tanganyika.
After we cook our victims in the volcano, we take them to the lake.
A glacial lake underneath the mountain.
Yes. It's a very narrow, wide lake.
That was formed by glaciers being around the volcano, and the volcano became active. It melted the ice, causing the great glaciers had riven in the ground.
Okay, so we'll finish up turn 10, and we'll see what we want to do. So 7 plus 3 is 10.
I got 9, so I got 25 points. Again.
I got 10, I got 13 points now. Ooh. All right, Jeremy, what are you doing?
Well, for one thing, since there's kind of some lakes, I'm going to put, like, a swamp in here.
Oh, good idea.
So you're creating a swamp.
An inch of swamp for 3. And then... hills.
Well, that's something... Ooh, that's something that we haven't had yet.
So Jeremy is creating swamps, hills.
And some forest, it looks like. Or plains. I'm not sure which yet. Oh, some forests. Right?
Yep. There's my 9, so I have a point left, so I spent 9.
Alright, Anthony, what are you doing?
In the northeast, on this small island here, which is not fully formed yet, the race of man exists. Huddled around the mountain, the base of the mountain, with their little huts.
Man?
Yes.
Bomb.
Nathan created man.
And he didn't do it in his own image, because they would be fat, lazy,
is it,
and
dare overweight. We say, is that the Isle of Man?
It could be.
They haven't created language yet, so instead it's just the...
It's the...
They're still in the caveman stage. They're like,
they throw rocks at each other.
Yeah.
Well, geez, it's been like what 2,000 years since
we're still throwing rocks at each other.
The frog people and the hawk people came into existence.
Yeah. So there's the human.
So they're like,
our rocks are sharp.
Yeah. So up here we have for 22 points the race of man. Comes into existence, and then I'm going to burn last.
Are they good?
They're good. So they are good. They are 1 point towards good. And then I'm going to spend my 1 point to create between and this area of lakes. There is swamp land around them, full of dangerous plagues to make the race of men hardy. Can you tell I just recently watched Lord of the Rings?
That's
the race of man shall fall.
25 points.
I am broke. But that continent's starting to take cool shape. We need a nice big forest here and some plains here.
Well, we've got to fill out most of it.
Yeah.
We haven't even started things like underwater races other than like
the froglocks.
The tadlocks live, but they don't live in the deep seas.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I mean, there's ocean.
Oh, that's right.
I am going to advance the Hawkmen civilization.
Oh, crap.
So now they're using spears instead of stones.
Basically, they're mark that they are advanced 1.
Yeah.
They are advanced 1.
Because advance...
And
this power causes the city or civilization to gain expert knowledge of a given science or magic. These might include war magic, healing, warfare, steel, weapons, smithing, so on. So long as the city or civilization persists, it will always be the greatest in this field. So what field do you want it to be?
Magic.
They're powerful magicians.
A specific type of magic.
Destruction?
War magic?
War magic.
Okay.
Death magic.
They're okay, death magic. Each other's, which keeps their population down.
So we'll do it.
Doom.
Advanced
masters
of war magic.
Of death magic.
Yeah, you can name it whatever you want.
You didn't have to write that on the map.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did. It's written right there. And then I have 3 points left over, which I'm going to use. They have horribly, horribly corrupted their land. So let's see.
You could do... Well, that's corrupt city.
Yeah, no.
That won't be a,
he's talking about changing the terrain. Changing the terrain.
Ooh, have toxic waste dumps. They're natural.
No, basically, along this ravine here, there's rivers of black water.
Oh,
This is where we dump our crap. Filled with evil death magic.
That's kind of cool.
We
idea.
Are the hawk people.
Well, this world has to have an antagonist in here somewhere.
Alright, well, this is turn 10, so does anybody want to move on to the second age?
No, we aren't done creating the continents yet. There's really a lot more we can do.
Okay, so you don't.
I say let's go another 5 rounds.
Alright. Well, then we need to decide. Do we want to stop our building for this time?
For this age and move on to the second age?
Well, no, I'm not saying we have to move on, but what I'm saying podcast-wise.
Ah.
Because, you know,
we've been doing this for like 45 minutes.
Yes.
Yes, we will end it there at the...
Turn 10.
At turn 10.
Still age 1.
Still age 1. So, to be continued next time.
Whether that's next recording or...
Right.
You can always record more later and then put it into a podcast.
Go ahead.
All right.
We just finished up turn 10 on that.
On age 1 creation,
age one of, the creation.
Of the land.
And that's a lot of fun.
Right
so
now
far.
We have 4 races. Well, we have 3 races and 1 sub-race. One very evil race who's a master of death magic.
Yes.
The
and Tracy
Tadlocks.
Says they are called the Hawkmen of Darkwater, and I think that is an excellent name.
That's fine.
I'm happy with that. And
all
I'm
right. I hope
it
we
down.
Don't get sued by Hanna-Barbera, Pirates of Darkwater.
Whatever.
These are Hawkmen, so it's all good. Well, the Tadlocks do not have names like that. They're Tadlocks. They visit their cousins, the Froglocks, and offer fish.
Stay away from the scary hawk people to the north.
They've heard rumors
northwest.
From the fleeing wildlife. And probably the hawk people that...
Die? That, like, the, show up and
yeah,
die?
The deep... The denizens. The pirates of Darkwater. The hawkmen of Darkwater that worship me as their dark god. Because I am Ethan, Lord of Evil.
And we can come up with whatever god names
and
later.
And pancakes.
And lakes.
Pancakes.
Yeah.
And lakes.
I am the god of Lord of Evil and lakes.
So far, you have built your godly aspect in this. We still are still deciding, it seems.
I apparently am, based on what I've built so far, I am the god of mountains and rivers. Because that's what I've put.
I'm just kind of a random
of
god for now.
And I'm the god that you guys go, dude, that dude's fucked up. And I'm like, ha, 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 ha,
as he eats another baby.
Hey, these baby frogs are tasty.
My frog.
Almost. Ooh, tadpole things.
Meteorites. All right, so
these hog babies are pretty tasty too. You want wings?
Yeah. No. Throw them in the volcano first. So that's the quick and dirty. We will. Continue this at a later time, but maybe doesn't make good radio, but
we have tons of pictures we'll be able to post.
I do recommend people
and this might be something I might try doing an enhanced podcast on, so we'll see.
Well, and actually,
and we do have the ability to record actual video
and post
we took lots of pictures, yeah. And what I can do is there's a way to put the pictures in the ID3 tags and have it slideshow through certain points.
Yeah, well, you have
well, the one way that they can do this is they what they kind of... Okay, you can do this where it's kind of random, but also they made it so that like a game master could build a world with his players,
mm-hmm.
but still have say in it, because he's still the GM. So he'd be like, you know, well, I like that, but I modified it a little bit. Or, you know, so they do say you could have a game master. You can also take specific god types if you really wanted to. But for now, the randomness, I think, is pretty cool. So, people should check this out. That was almost kind of my review, too. It's a good little, quick, easy thing. And
as they probably noticed, it's pretty. We're pretty open. We started with a little bit of. It has to be exactly an inch, but we allowed that to
sort of goes on its merry way after
right,
that.
Right. Once you get the hang of it, and then at some point we're going to get into things like you might decide, you know what, my hawk people are cool, but I like the giant bunny people to have an order of paladins, you know, sure. Whatever. So
wow, creating races in the next age is 6 points.
Yeah,
they expect you to make a lot of races.
Well,
don't they?
It is the
the age of races,
because they don't want your world just to have like one race.
Well, we have humans, froglocks, hawkmen, and tadlocks so far, which is kind of cool. I just figured I'd make the race of man on their own isolated islands. That way, when they, like, encounter everybody else, they do the horrible thing that humans always do. Oh, what is it? I don't know. Kill it.
Except for the one human that's like, I wonder if it's tasty. Because there's always at least one who puts it in his mouth.
The humans are bad about that. No, don't put that in your mouth. You don't know where it's been.
They're probably not the only ones. The hawk people probably... they like to hear their kills squeal. The frog people are like, taste it first. yeah, that's a good dude. He was like the messenger of peace. Maybe that's why he tasted bite. Oh well.
I wondered why he gave us indigestion.
All right.
You get them all?
Yep.
Sorry. Okay. We can always take more pictures later too.
So that is that. We will be back unless we have anything to add. We'll be back right after this.
Paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. We do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles.
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games.
Hey, don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure. Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
I guess we don't know what we're talking about. And we are back, and today on our three-parter, we've got a number of reviews coming along, pretty much all reviews. I've got a review, Jeremy's got a review, and Nathan's got a review. So we'll kick it off here with, guess what, a review.
The review.
Go for it.
Hello, everybody. Today I'm going to do a review on... Okay, those of you who are fanboys, cover your ears and start saying la 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 as loud as you can. I'm going to do a review on Warhammer 8th Edition. I finally broke down and picked up the book last week and have managed to read through the rules section of the rulebook, the massive 510 pages of which... only 175 pages of it are actual rules, and the rest is all background and stuff like that. So 175 pages of rules, 300 and something of fluff. Yeah. It's also horribly expensive, as everyone knows. It's $75. Thankfully, our friendly local game store was very courteous and allowed me to, you know, get some credit from some stuff that I traded in so that I actually ended up paying considerably less. I've read through the rules. The rules have not changed a whole heck of a lot from 7th edition. But where they have changed, the changes have been massive changes. It's like the rule set as a basic rule set is still the same. Your people move such and such distance as listed by the movement stat. Their movement stat can be doubled in a march, and they can march only if there's no troops within a such and such distance. But where they've made changes to make things streamline, go faster in various different aspects. The first major one that most people are going to notice is charges. When you charge, you take 2d6, roll it, and add that 2d6 to your base move rating. So you can move, if you're playing Empire Halberdiers, you have a move of 4, you can charge anywhere from 6 to 16 inches, meaning you're going to get into combat that much faster.
That's not too bad.
That part is really cool, because it means that, and the way cavalry and stuff works is you roll 3d6, drop the lowest die, or one of the die, and then take the other two plus your movement rating. So they can charge anywhere from 11 inches all the way up to, good God, 21 inches, because some cavalry has 9-inch movement. So, you know, you're going to cross the no-man's land of 24 inches very, very quickly in this version. One of the changes that a lot of people have had problems with and have complained about, and I have my ifs about it because, unfortunately, I play, like, the slow, stupid races. But for other races, it seems to be really good, is when you actually get into... when you charge in combat, just because you charge doesn't mean you actually get to attack first. Attacks on charges and all base-to-base combat goes off of initiatives. Whoever's faster fights first. For people like the ogres who have an initiative of 2, that sucks, because everybody has a higher initiative than you except for Croxagores and zombies. The lizardmen, well, most of the lizardmen have a lower initiative than you, and zombies. Everybody else is going to pummel you into the dirt, and considering they have no armor and no shields, you're going to be pummeled into the dirt before you can actually even retaliate. There's a big chance you might lose massive chunks of your army, of your unit, before you can even do anything, even though you charged first. Which is problematic. But the thing is as a whole, when you see it played out in a game where the initiatives are fairly close to each other, it actually works out well. But when there's a massive disparity between the two, yeah, you're going to bitch. There's no other way. It's like, I've got initiative 2. I charged your ass. I should be able to attack first. And he's like, well, I've got initiative of 5, so I get to fight first because my guys were planning for it. How? You know, I charge you. Your people are setting themselves up ready to be attacked. They're setting themselves for someone bearing down on them to crush them with their weight. How are they going to be striking as they're trying to keep from being run over by, you know, 800-pound giants? Things like that. That's, you know, there's going to be complaints about that. But as a whole, the initiative-based combat works good. It works well. It's going to make the races where they have high initiative sell more, because people are going to want to attack first.
Mm-hmm.
So high elves are really heavily, you know, heavily pimped this one, because, one, they have a super high initiative, and then high elves on top of that always attack first with pretty much every unit, including their great swords.
Mm.
So they're using great weapons and attacking first. But, so... charging is different. Combat, when you get into combat, you have first rank fights like normal. But in the new rules, if you have a second rank, everybody in the second rank gets to support, do what's called a support attack, which is they get to do one attack. Which means that you have however many attacks from your front rank coming in, and then an extra attack from each model in the second rank. And if you're using a really wide-fronted unit, which is 10 models wide, which is called a horde, you get 3 ranks deep. So the second rank and the third rank both give an extra supporting attack for each model that's in base-to-base combat. One of the nice things is if you're using monstrous infantry, like, say, ogres or trolls or minotaurs, the second rank gets to add up to 3 attacks because they're monstrous infantry. So you have a lot more attacks coming in, which means a lot more models are going to die, which means combat resolution is going to be very, very nasty. So the combats are very, very bloody. Usually when you get into base-to-base combat usually doesn't last more than a round or two, because you've eradicated most of the unit and the unit's fleeing, or they've eradicated most of your unit and your unit's fleeing. So base-to-base combat is really nasty. Archery. Archers can fire 2 ranks deep, and there's also an ability that certain weapons have called volley fire, which means the third rank can fire as well. But they're not really good at it because they can't see what they're firing at. But there's an ability called volley fire which looks really nasty. I have not seen it in effect. I've only read it in the book. Certain artilleries are no longer guess. You don't have to guess the range you want to fire your cannon. You go, oh, I want to hit that. You put a marker there, and then you take the random die, and roll it. And it hits, you know, if it says a hit, it hits right there, and then you roll for the bounce, and it goes that far. So you no longer guess. Like, you're going to use your that volley fire missile launcher, you know, the Hellstrom volley fire rocket thing. You put the template, the Hellblaster. You put the template where you want. Roll the scatter die and roll the scatter die and the distance die. Move the template if necessary, and that's where it hits. No more. I think it's 26 inches to that target. No, you just
go. Does he roll the Hellblaster volley gun? Is he rolling the possibly getting a misfire?
Well, there is still a misfire because you still rolled
the
scatter die
like
and the.
You rolled it like three times or something.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
That's a specific weapon, so yeah. we don't have the Empire rules. So we don't.
Yeah, I don't know the specific rules on that. But the thing is all template based weapons. You place the template where you want, then you roll the scatter die and the distance die.
But
tells you where it ends up.
Can you measure to
that?
Well, you measure to make. What you do is you say, "I want to hit there," and you measure to make sure that you have the distance to do
faster. It sounds like what they're really trying to do with the
streamlining it
and basically get more models on the table and make games.
Because I know
and
I was just gonna say with like the Kings of War rules, they have a note on the side that says. You can measure at any time.
Yeah, because there's been complaints about that.
Thank God.
Yeah. With artillery weapons or large weapons that fire long distances, you say where you want to hit, and then you measure, and or you can measure before. You say, I want to shoot there, and I've got more than enough distance to do so. There's no more random distance stuff, which is nice.
I think for a war game, a tabletop war, this isn't a video game.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, better.
Yeah, I agree.
So many,
and on the artillery aspect of firing, I like the idea of no more guess range stuff because it's like these people are trained artillerists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're gonna be able to figure out how to hit that distance where they want,
right?
Fairly closely. It's not gonna be like.
And I'm okay with the random dice at the end.
Yeah,
I mean,
but the whole having to guess how far removing that was a great bonus. I think the other cool thing, the templates, if it's partially covered. It's hit. No more 4+. If the template covers any of the base whatsoever, even the tiniest little sliver of the corner, it's hit. Which means that massive chunks of units get squashed now by stuff, which is great in my opinion, because it means that things like the scrap launcher, the Knobler scrap launcher, makes more sense because it's strength 3 armor piercing with killing blow. Which means you're going to hit more models with it, and there's more chances you'll get sixes, which immediately cause a wound, which is a good thing.
Yeah, the Hell Cannon uses the large template. So.
Yeah, I know, and I watched it actually in effect. That thing is freaking nasty, awesome, and the new rule set because it still causes all the penalties, the leadership penalties and stuff, and it just wipes out units. I watched it take out an entire.
What it is. Yeah, it definitely would freak people.
Yeah. I watched it take out an entire unit of Dark Elf Corsairs with a magic user attached to it. Wiped out the magic user on the hit. Just spread her all over the planes.
I have magic. Hey, what's that sound?
Yeah. It was nasty because
that
he rolled.
Can't over there just hawked a nasty loogie on you. That's what happened.
He rolled the scatter die and rolled a hit and then rolled a misfire in the distance and it fired the big nasty shot. The really bad one where it can't fire anymore for the round. So they took, all of them took strength 10.
It's like a strength 10 hit.
Yeah. Everyone took strength 10 hit. It hit 24 models. It's just like, the whole unit just exploded, which was
nice.
Awesome bad. But moving on from artillery and base-to-base combat, what we have next is there's some minor changes with firing. Like you can fire through forests now, and you can fire through units, but they grant cover to the unit you're firing at, and it's tantamount. So if there's two units between you and the unit you're firing at, they both grant hard cover, which is a -4, which means you're not going to hit.
It's cumulative.
It's cumulative. But you can actually, do so. Unlike, you still can't fire into melee, of course, but if there's a unit that
Unless
you can
you're
see...
Skaven, I would assume.
No, you can't even with Skaven anymore.
Yay!
They fixed that in the 7th edition rules.
Yeah, because really, even if you were human and you just didn't care...
Yeah,
shoot them. But
shoot
there are
shoot
them.
Shoot
yeah,
just
them.
Shoot through it. It's okay.
We have more.
Yeah,
you're
but,
alive, aren't you?
Moving on to the next section would be magic, and magic got really crazy in this edition. Now, in the first in the last edition, you had your mage. You bought yourself a level 4 mage, right? And that gave you 3 power dice plus the 2 power dice that you had because you get a bonus power die per level after level 1, right? So you'd have 5 power dice. And this version, At the start of every magic phase, you pick up 2d6. Roll it. Like I got a 4 and a 2. I have 6 power dice. The person dispelling gets the highest of the 2 dice, so he gets 4 dice to dispel. Your level doesn't add into it, but when you find the Winds of Change, which is the magic phase for rolling the dice, you can roll a die for each mage to channel. If you roll the die and you get a 6, you channel an extra power die. They can do the same thing. So if you have multiple mages, you can channel, from what I understand, you can channel an extra power, or attempt to channel an extra power die per mage you have on the field, which means you can buff up how much magic you have. Spells are really, really nasty now. It's like, more than likely, you're going to do damage with magic. It doesn't matter. Your opponent might be able to dispel a couple of your spells. They're not going to be able to dispel everything, because you're always going to have more power dice than they have dispel dice. So they're going to have
unless
to pick and choose.
Unless you buy dispel.
Yeah. You can't buy dispel dice, as far as I know.
No, I mean scrolls.
I don't know about those. I haven't seen those yet. I haven't got to the item section yet. But I, from what I saw from the game that I watched play, you know, the heavy magic army, the Dark Elves, had nothing that could dispel the chaos magic that was coming in. They were throwing dice at it, and that was it. So there might not be dispel scrolls anymore, for all I know.
Or they just haven't gotten that far yet.
Yeah. But magic is really, really nasty. The magic in this book, there are some spells in here that affect characters, that can affect characters and units. The characters don't get a lookout serve roll, and it will kill them in one hit.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I watched someone use the Lore of Metal, and they had a spell that turned people into gold statues, and it affects character models on a 6. And the guy had 3 character models in the front of the unit, and the guy rolled 3 sixes, wiped out the guy's army general, the battle standard bearer, and his mage, and the first round of combat.
Now,
and he's like, you win,
I
can't do anything.
I laugh, but that's kind of... That could be really crappy.
Yeah, it would really suck to be on the receiving end of it. There are no saves, nothing you can do against it. So the magic is really, really nasty.
There's got to be something, though.
One of the crazy things, though, is on casting spells, if you roll, between the dice you roll, if you roll 3 or less, that mage loses their concentration and can no longer cast any spells that spell round. If you roll double sixes, you cast with Irresistible Force, and it miscasts because you lose control of the magic, and the magic just goes crazy. So miscasting is good in one respect, because the spell will go off and it can't be dispelled. Yeah, if you get an Irresistible Force in this game, you cannot even attempt to dispel it anymore. At all.
That's probably...
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And since you're rolling so many dice for spells, because you're limited... much less on how many dice you can roll. You know, in the last version, it's like, I can roll 4 dice because my wizard level is 4. Now it's higher. I don't know the exact limit on it, but you can roll more dice. And like certain spellcasting places, like the vampires, they have no limits on how many dice they can use when they cast spells. So it's like, if I want to roll all 14 of my dice to make sure this spell goes off, I can. You know, or all 12 of the... Let's say you roll 12 dice. If I want to roll all 12 of my dice to cast a spell, I can. Granted, you're probably going to get 2 or more sixes, which means it's going to go off here with Irresistible Force and cause nasty stuff to your side, too, because all the miscasts now are bad.
Yeah.
All the way down to, like, wiping out the entire unit that the magic user is in. Or doing things like...
messing with magic.
Or doing things like losing spell levels and spells and power dice from your casting pool. Just really bad stuff happens when you miscast in this version. But that being said, if someone casts a spell at you and say they're using 6 dice and they don't roll an Irresistible Force, and you only have 3 dice and you roll 3 dice and you get 2 sixes, you've just Irresistible Force dispelled. So you can still dispel with 12s, Irresistible Force, in this version. So it's just you can't dispel an Irresistible Force. But if the spell goes off without Irresistible Force and you get 2 sixes, you dispel with Irresistible Force, which means no matter what you have on the dice, even if you're like, say, 15 points lower than what he had, because you got 2 sixes, it's dispelled. So you can still dispel with Irresistible Force. So magic in that respect seems really, really nasty, in my opinion. The troop models, as always, are cool. The rules for the terrain are crazy screwy, in my opinion. This is one of the parts where I kind of have problems, because... The minimum amount of terrain pieces you're going to have on the table is 5. The most you're going to have is 10. That being said, that's 10 selections. Mm-hmm. Some of the selections have anywhere from 3 to 6 pieces that you put out on the table. So if you're putting out 10 rolls on the table, and say you roll an empire town, or you roll an order town and a destruction town, Each one of those is going to have up to three buildings, up to three sections of fence. So you're going to have, between those two, at worst, you're going to have three pieces of fence and three buildings each. That's going to take up a good two-foot section of the table. That's still, those, each one of those are only one choice, even though there's six pieces of terrain there. And so the tables are going to be very, very cluttered with terrain. They want you more to be tactical. Well, the thing is that's great to be tactical, but for, like, when you roll a forest now, you roll the forest, then you roll on a subchart. The forest can do terrible things like have clinging trees that choke your units as you move through them and kill models as you move through the forest. There's rivers like Rivers of Blood, which cause fear against people as they try to come through them. There's swamps that, as your troops come through them, they get, like, poison attacks. They get poison attacks when they come out of the swamp for their first round of combat. There's all sorts of weird things, but the terrain itself is nasty. There's like watchtower. There's like buildings that are like magic towers and stuff that if you leave troops in them, they can like magically explode and stuff because the magic builds up and stuff.
Well,
if
that would be kind of neat to add to their games.
Yeah, arcane architecture. There's all sorts of stuff that you can do, and you look at the chart, and let me see if I can find the chart for you guys because it's crazy. You choose your armies, then you choose your fields. There's allied armies. You do allied units. Here's the chart. Battlefield. Place at least D6 plus 4 pieces of terrain. At least. And they're looking at a 4-foot by 4-foot table here is their size. So minimum 10 pieces. You have Settlement of Order, D3 buildings, D3 sets of obstacles, Steadfast Sanctum. And then you have a chart you roll on, a Sinister Structure, and a chart you roll on. Hills. Because you can have things like Temples of Skulls, a Scree Slope, Anvil of Vol. Obstacles, Mysterious Forest, which has a chart, Mysterious Rivers, which have a chart, Magical Mystery, which has a chart, a Marsh, which has a chart, buildings like a Watchtower Mansion or other similar ordinary buildings. So the terrain, not only do you have to worry about the troops eating your units, you have to worry about the terrain attacking you too. That, I think, is just crazy.
Sounds like Warhammer.
Yeah, well,
it is a world that is actively trying to
kill you. Yeah, that is correct, but it's like... It gives another faucet.
A world that hates you.
Yeah. It gives you another thing that you have to pay attention to. That being said, oh.
That was not good.
No, that chair needs to be tightened down. You're going to break it.
All right.
The artwork, as always, is gorgeous. The layout of the book is great. They have a nice big section on, you know, how to do models and stuff. And they have literally like 200 pages of fluff on the backstory for stuff that I haven't read yet. But the artwork, as always, is great, and the models, the pictures of the models and stuff, their models are, you know, what we could never hope to attain, sort of thing. But at $75...
$75.
That's a lot for a book.
Yeah.
And honestly, if it weren't for the fact that I had saved a chunk of change, which I will not discuss on the air because you guys would be like, well, I want to get that, and, you know, I actually sold stuff to be able to get that, it's not worth it. You don't need all the fluff. If you have the last edition book, main rule book, the big book,
well,
you've got all the fluff.
You want to keep your eye open and look on eBay for the...
The Isle of Blood stuff is going for pennies on the dollar on eBay. But the thing is, you won't find...
The mini rule book that comes in that.
Yeah, the mini rule books
are... just the rules, it's not the fluff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty much what you really
want. That's all you need. Basically, what you need to do is if you play Warhammer and your friends play Warhammer, more than likely you know someone who plays High Elves, and more than likely you know someone who plays Skaven. They're two fairly popular armies. What you do is you sell off the Skaven figures to one friend, you sell off the High Elves to your other friend, and then you buy the Isle of Blood set, you get the mini rule book, some dice, and some templates, and you sell off the figures, and you come out, you know, with a cost that's less than the $75 for just a rule book.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I would have done if it weren't for the fact that the person who plays High Elves and Skaven had told me they didn't want to buy any figures until after I bought the rule book, and then they said, well, if I'd known you were going to buy it, I would have bought the minis off of you. After I told him when we were at the store and he was buying the set, I wanted to buy the set, but I didn't want the minis, and he told me he didn't want to buy them either. So, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
But in retrospect, the rules are interesting. I've seen them in play. I've only played one game, and it was two big crunchy armies, Ogre Kingdoms versus Beastmen, and the Ogre Kingdoms won by 101 points. 1 point into a minor victory. The way they do victories now, it's a set amount. 0 to 100 points either way is a draw. 100 points to 200 points either way is a minor victory. 200 points, 100 points, 101 points to 200 points either way is a massive victory. Anything more than 200 points is a massacre.
Right.
So they've done some changes to that too. We should probably switch out your chair, dude. It's like pulling apart really nasty.
All right. We have to fix that.
But all in all, It's the rules are good.
$20 and a penny.
Huh?
Warhammer Fantasy 8 Small Book Island of Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give it another couple weeks.
Yeah, it'll be down.
And it'll be like $10.
Yeah, which is a good price. I would heartily recommend if you can get the mini rule book for $20. It's worth $20 with just the rules. All right. Not 75.
Yeah, not 75. Alrighty then. Well,
there's one for 56.
The review. All right. As everybody knows, I am a fan of Dark Sun. I have never actually been able to play Dark Sun or run Dark Sun, except only in the Shattered Lands game that came out on computer many, many, many years ago. And I fell in love with Dark Sun back then, and Dark Sun has always had a soft spot for me because it's so just diametrically different than any other fantasy setting that's out there. I mean, to basically sum up Dark Sun, it is post-apocalyptic D&D. You're basically living in this world that has been basically raped to death by harmful magic. The gods lost their war with the primordials and were either destroyed or turned away from the land of Athos. And actually, the campaign setting itself focuses on a small area, a relatively small area on the planet Athos, of the region of Tyr. And so, basically, this big area is basically enclosed by vast deserts that are surrounded by vast deserts and a huge sea of silt. And it's basically cordoned off from the rest of the world, so no one really knows what else is out there. This is just the region of Tyr, and in this region of Tyr, you have all these city-states that are ruled by these sorcerer kings, and these sorcerer kings are extremely powerful wizard or magic users that are outright completely nutty, nutty as a fruitcake, insane, and some are not as nuts, but
that's
they're all
crazy.
They're all really, really bad people. Essentially, the history of Dark Sun is you have the preservers and the defilers, and the preservers basically for arcane magic to work on Athos is it takes life from those things around you, including the people, the plants, that sort of thing. And there are two different methods of casting this magic. There's preserving, which is you just take a little bit, but enough remains to keep the land alive. Then there's defiling, which is you just take it all and let the land die. Early on in Athos's history, there were a lot of very bad people and very powerful wizards that used this magic to basically hurl death in different directions. This great sorcerer king was destroyed when his apprentices, who later became the sorcerer kings, turned on him and destroyed him. One of those people became Rajat. He became the Dragon of Tyr, and I'll get a little bit into dragons later. Anyway, Athos itself is the best sort of description I've heard of it is that whereas most D&D settings are settings that encourage the GM to say yes, Athos and Dark Sun is a setting that encourages you to say no, because there is no divine power source. Yes, you can theoretically have yourself a paladin that has some sort of divine spark that he's getting power from type of thing, but those are just absolutely rare cases. On Athos, you have the typical races. The new races that they introduce are the Mule, which I will be pronouncing Mule because that's how I've always pronounced it. But it can also be pronounced Mole or I believe Mole or Mule or anything like that. But I've always been understand its mule, which is essentially a half-dwarf. It's a half-human, half-dwarf. They were bred for slavery. They're very cool. Their racial ability is, they're really, their incredible toughness, basically. Very stout, very strong, very have a lot of vitality is sort of the thing beyond the mules. Then the other race that is in the book is the Thrycreen, which are the bug people that have six arms. Now, they made them a bit more humanoid in this new edition than in the old edition, so they're not as huge as they used to be. I really think they really drew back a little bit on the Thrycreen from previous editions. The Thrycreen, I think, have a really kind of lame racial power, which is an encounter power that lets them use their claws. I kind of have issue with that. I think they should have gone with something different. Now, yes, they have natural jumping. They means they're always considered to have a running start when jumping. There are little things like that that are very nice. They have a high speed. They are very attuned to being monks and psionicists and stuff like that, which is what they were originally. The other races that you'll find on Athas is, yes, they put in the Dragonborn, and the Dragonborn were created by one of the Sorcerer Kings and are called the Drey. He, according to legends, he created the race and then decided to, looked at the race and said it was imperfect and threw it out. Basically took it and tossed it out of his city and said, you can go off and die now because I don't care, and went off to do his thing. It was Dregoth. The Dragonborn persisted and became more like a slave, like a race of slavers, and are sort of this race of bargainers. Sort of basically the best sort of thing I could say is they're like the Ferengi from Star Trek.
The Dragonborn or Ferengi?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dwarves are around, but instead of having instead of dwarves being what you typically think of as dwarves, as big and hairy and coming out of the mountains, well, ancient history says something about the dwarves once living in mountains, but now they have since the mountains have basically been played out, there is nothing left to get from them. They had to leave. No dwarf can read dwarven. There is dwarven script. There is dwarven old dwarven. Runes, all that sort of thing, but no one can read it. It's a lost written language, but the dwarves can still speak it, which makes things, I think, is a kind of an interesting thing. But the dwarves are now mostly hairless and are still their little stout selves, but are generally found to be artisans or still mining some sort of thing for the Sorcerer King. The Eladrin are here, as is what they're calling the lands within the wind, which is the Feywild. There are certain pockets on Athas where the Feywild, which is mostly destroyed in Dark Sun. There's little pockets where it still exists of tales of, like, there's a city that appears here every, you know, full moon or something like that. Usually that's going to be associated with the Feywild, and the Eladrin are these creatures or these beings that live within those or venture from them. They hate arcane casters because arcane casters are the reason that the Feywild was destroyed. It's because of all this magic, this defiling that went on Athas that destroyed their Feywild in this region. So they're likely to basically try to stab you if you're any kind of a magic user. The Eladrin are sort of still have their wigginess, but usually if you run into one that's outside of their Fey realm and whatnot, they're generally outcasts. They've been shoved out. Usually, it's because if they've actually practiced arcane magic, they've been shoved out and whatnot. Now, the elves in this are basically the same as they were in the old edition. Basically, when you're thinking elves on Athas, think gypsies. Elves are a race of runners. They think riding on an animal is insulting to them, and so they move very quickly and generally can run for days on end type of thing, and are wanderer. They're nomads that wander about the deserts. Then you have half-giants, which are the Goliaths. Now, the fact that they have sort of made the Goliaths into the half-giants, I could see why they did that. I don't really agree with it, but that's fine. That's a flavor thing, I think, ultimately. And, of course, you also have your half-elves, your humans, and the cannibalistic halflings.
Do they still build the weird insect things?
The weird insect things?
Yeah, at one point they either built or flew on some sort of insect critters.
Yes and no. They can have them. There is a jungle area on Athos up in some mountains that's protected by a, bat smurf crazy druid, of course. And then, of course, tieflings are around as well, but they're fairly rare. But they all have their little blood debt thing, and so they look awful, and their sort of thing. There are no kobolds, there are no orcs, there are nothing like that. There used to be Genasi, there used to be Kalashtar, and there are still a smattering of Minotaurs running about. The big thing that the book introduces, which everyone's talked about, are themes. Now, I think these are great. These are an awesome idea. Putting out, basically it's like a Paragon path, but it's for your heroic tier. And I think it's a cool way to add an additional power, to get some additional flavor to your character, and I can't wait for them to do more. This has a lot of good ones in it, and I really want to see some more, hopefully through Dragon Magazine, I would assume. But we'll see what else they do. It's a very nice way for them to basically be able to say, I have a wizard that's a gladiator, or I have this monk that is a Templar type of thing. So it's kind of cool. After all of that, we have, of course, the psionics. Now, anyone who knows Dark Sun knows that everybody's a psionic. Everyone has psionic abilities. Now, they talk about why this is. One theory is because there's no divine magic, because that has left the planet, left Athos, that some people have basically developed these psionic abilities to compensate. And so everyone can choose a wild talent, which is usually some minor ability that's like a cantrip for a wizard, so it's like the light spell or something like that. It's like, here's telekinetic grasp is like mage hand, basically. Things like that are really, really minor things. But then you can enhance stuff through basically taking different psionic classes or feats and stuff like that. I mean, there's a new build for the wild mind in here, and various things like that. Then I think one of the cool things in here is there is a new warlock pact for the sorcerer kings. So you can, instead of making a warlock pact with, say, a devil or a fey entity, you make it with the sorcerer king. And the Sorcerer King gives you a bit of his power, which is very much in line with how Templars work and how that power was granted in Athos, in Dark Sun. Now, there is several fairly cool epic destinies. I think, obviously, the coolest one has got to be the Dragon King. Where you can start becoming a dragon, a dragon king of your own right. Now, there's also the Avengeon, which is the more the good side of that, where you become this sort of insectoid dragon type monster thing. Then you can become uber psionicists, of course, nice new feats.
Which the psionics in 4E is not bad.
No, the psionics in 4E actually work. It's great. There aren't any, another flavor thing they did is there aren't any horses or any of those usual pack animals like oxes or anything like that. As you have these strange creatures that pop up. And when I talk here in a second about the creature catalog, I'll talk a bit more about the monsters. Not a lot of magic items and stuff like that. I think one cool thing that they really do in it is they give you a new a method of reward called a favor, where instead of getting gold or getting anything, getting gold. Now, to be clear, there's not a lot of metal on Athos, and a lot of the coinage is done in ceramic pieces that are quote unquote minted by the different Sorcerer King states, and there's usually a trade tariff and. Like one city might not take stuff from another city type of thing. That happens a lot. But the favor is a neat way, I think, of basically you're gaining the favor of this merchant house or this sorcerer king basically says, I owe you a favor. Now, how you cash in that favor obviously is going to depend, and it's I think it adds a really cool story element that you could use to, you know, hey, we need X amount of coin to be able to do this. Well, your favor is worth a good amount, so, you know, your Sorcerer King friend or your Templar friend or whoever will step in and help you out. And it's a good way of sort of giving those players their reward that they're used to in the form of, you know, hey, gold and all that stuff, rather than basically saying, hey, this NPC owes you a favor. You have this actual monetary value that you're assigning to it. The other thing I like about it is, say you learn that the mayor's house has been taken over by a lizard man. You go and you kill the lizard man, and then, okay, the lizard man has some stuff, but hey, look at all this cool stuff that the mayor has. We're going to loot his house. No. Favors get around that and saying, well, no, you're not going to take all of the mayor's stuff because, well, that would be bad. Instead, you gain a favor from the mayor. You have a powerful favor because there's a lot more politics going on in this one. In Dark Sun, it's kind of nice.
Depending on the characters you play.
The I think probably my favorite section of the whole book is the Atlas of Athos, which basically details all of the city states and a lot of different regions. And it's doesn't go into a lot of detail, but it gives you enough detail whereas you can elaborate and do your own thing here and there. Only problem I have with some of them is the some of their choices for map segments that they have don't really highlight what they're talking about on the pages that are there, and that kind of bothered me. A few very cool things here and there. You know, you learn about the giants and the Sea of Silt and the Tablelands and the different things like that. And then the book goes into how to run a game in Dark Sun.
How to kill your
players. Which is pretty much the world is trying to destroy you. There are no... the book basically comes out and tells you, it's like, you're not going to find endless canteens of water. You're not going to find things like that because the planet is harsh. The planet, you need to illustrate the fact that there's a lot of survival that you have to deal with in this. And going out into the deserts is not something you take lightly. It is not something that you, say, well, I buy up some rations. Well, okay, rations are going to be very expensive because you have survival days that you pay for, and basically you're paying about 10 gold pieces per day to stay alive. And that's assuming that you are basically clothing yourself correctly and giving yourself enough water to survive out in the desert for a day, which is a lot. It's a good book. The early downsides I had with it were obviously the Thrycreen and the defiling mechanic. At first, sort of bugged me a little bit. And the way the defiling mechanic works is if you have a daily arcane power, you gain this at-will defiling tool, basically, that you can use. Is after you make an attack roll or a damage roll, you can decide to defile. And then do damage to all your allies equal to one-half their... healing surge value to all your allies within 20 spaces, and you get to re-roll the damage or re-roll the attack roll, whichever you're using it for. And I think that that in and of itself I thought was kind of lame in that it was just for daily powers. But then that you can, there are feats that reward a defiling. There are classes that you can go into that reward defiling. So there's that little, you think about it, there's that little twitch in there. It's like, well, I need to squeeze out this 4d6 fireball for my daily power, and I just rolled, you know, 8 points of damage on it. That kind of sucks. So the GM can now go, well, you know, you could defile and re-roll that. And then there's that thing of going, well, maybe it's worth it to do it in order to take this guy down this instant rather than let him have another action. I think it's a good way of illustrating how things got all screwed up in Athos as it was. And the other half of this, of the Dark Sun game, obviously is the creature catalog. I would tell you right now that even if you are not planning on running a Dark Sun game, that you should pick up the Dark Sun creature catalog, because it has some awesome monsters in it.
Like the land, the real land shark.
It has some additional templates or themes you can add to monsters to, like, basically their example is, let me find it here. Their example is basically making a silt shark, so basically a shark, and modifying it so it swims around in the sea of silt rather than in the water, which is very Dark Sun. Because one of the things that people talk about, the people of Dark Sun talk about, is because magic is so vile and so nasty. Whenever one theory going around is whenever a wizard casts a spell, a dark, strange creature is created somewhere on Athos. Now, of course, the book doesn't tell you if this is true. It's entirely leaving this up to you, but it's one of those widely accepted things of, oh, hey, that guy just casted magic. We need to burn him at the stake. Or we need to, you know, set him out so the ants eat him.
A giant, horrible, terrifying desert ant.
And so you have a lot of monsters in Dark Sun here that have, obviously there's a lot with some psionic abilities, and a lot are, obviously, they're desert creatures, most of them. But they're all pretty nasty for their level, and that goes with what Dark Sun is all about. Dark Sun is a harsh, harsh place to live. I think the biggest one on here that people keep gravitating towards is the monster of the Tembo, which is a level 6 solo skirmisher. That has, let's see, double actions, has an aura that stops people from using healing effects and doing and does damage. It can ignore forced movement, and does 2d10 plus 3 damage with its bite attack at will. So, it's kind of nasty, it's definitely a not a monster I would love to see. Now, instead of dragons, you do of course have the Dragon of Tyr stats in here, but the Dragon of Tyr is frightening. However, there are where Dark Sun doesn't have dragons per se, they have drakes. Now, drakes are sort of fill that dragon niche, but they are not intelligent dragons. They're very animal-like, draconic creatures. So that's sort of the idea of what you run into on Dark Sun. They also stat out all of the Sorcerer Kings, which is a lot of fun to read, actually, because some of them are pretty nasty. Some different characters that you might run into. Plus it has, of course, some new monster themes and terrain and some hazards to run into. Now, my favorite thing about the Dark Sun campaign setting and creature catalog that I had a chance to when I read it was when I realized that the city-state of... Let me find it. The city-state of Balak, which is run by the Sorcerer King Andropinus. The city-state of Balak is Cuba.
Is Cuba?
Yes, and Andropinus is Castro. He was a democratically elected leader 700 years ago, and he is elected for life. And it is a democracy, but he pretty much tells them what they do. It's rather amusing. They put a different little twist on each of the Sorcerer Kings, which is kind of nice. Tehticule, the Sorcerer King of Draj, is, you know, crazy and is like Aztecian and likes people to sacrifice people to him, and basically doesn't know the meaning of the word subtlety. And I can entirely see a campaign of, say, a Templar basically goes out and hires the characters and says, listen, these these giants are coming in from the Sea of Stealth, and they are robbing these outskirts and they're robbing us of some food and some water of some of our outlying farms. And one might say, well, why doesn't the Sorcerer King do anything about it? When I think the Templar would say, no, you don't understand. The Sorcerer King hasn't noticed this problem yet. It would be bad if he notices this problem, because then a lot of people will die when he casts magic to hose the crap out of that island.
Yeah, true.
And it's more like, here is this tiny insignificant speck that has gotten the Sorcerer King's ire, or his attention. He now tack nukes it.
Yeah.
That's kind of the idea you get that some of these people have. And so it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. It's a good setting. I think it works really well in 4th edition. So that is Dark Sun.
The only thing I could see is depending on how they do the survival things per day, that could drag and or cause some players to be like, really? You're trying to adventure here.
Mm-hmm.
Or just not want to go anywhere.
Well, that's the thing. Survival days are 5 gold pieces each. And you can, basically, as you expend survival days, rather than saying, well, I've picked up this much, you know, rations, whatnot. It's like, well, you have gold. You have, you know, your 50 gold pieces. You have your ceramic pieces. You spend 5 gold a day while you're out in the desert. As long as you have that money, you're fine. You're assumed to have bought the stuff that you need. However, if you're dumped out in the desert without any of your stuff, this is a major problem.
Okay.
As there are no... you can't find rituals that will just create campsite. You can't find rituals that will create food. It doesn't work like that anymore. You're sort of sitting out there going, I have to forage for food, and I have no shelter, so I could get sun sickness. And at night, it gets darn cold in the desert. So it adds a few interesting...
Do they take into account, like, species or certain races have to know how to survive out there?
I think they go into that as far as... If you have the skill to do it.
Right.
Like, the Thrykreen have a +2 to athletics and +2 to nature type of thing. So, I mean, they have those, and then it's nature checks to run around and forage for food, and then in different areas you're going to find better stuff than others. So, it's an interesting way to go about it, and overall, I like it. I think it's pretty good.
Probably more do the King of War rules the first read.
Okay. Do the Kings of War.
Okay.
Kings of War rules, Romantic Games. Go for it.
Alright, so Kings of War is the Kings of War beta, let me put it that way, is the rule set that Mantic has put out for their miniatures. And while the Mantic miniatures themselves are great for building up their, like any army, the rule set is very, very interesting. It is almost, I don't want to say it's Warhammer Lite, because it does have its own feel, but it is easier to learn and cuts through some of the frustration that was found in Warhammer. Such as units can move through friendlies.
Mm-hmm.
Units can march sideways, slowly. Units can move backwards, slowly. They've simplified a lot of things. If you have a unit of 10 guys, all 10 can probably attack. 10 archers, they can all attack. And so on and so on and so on. And they have really linked their box sets to the actual rule system. And when you purchase your armies using the point systems in the rules, you aren't purchasing individual guys except for heroes. You are purchasing units. So you don't have to worry about, okay, I'm going to spend 5 points on this guy.
Mm-hmm.
No, no. You'll spend 20 points and get a whole unit or a troop or a horde of units. The game is lots of D6s. And we're talking a lot of D6s.
Like Champions level of D6s or Star Wars levels of D6s?
Yeah, we're getting up there.
Okay.
But the thing is,
buy yourself a brick of D6s then.
Yeah. I mean, it is up there with Warhammer, but if you had enough points on the battlefield and enough special things going on, you would be rolling a whole crap load of dice. The thing is, when you attack, you have to charge to attack a unit, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And the attacker gets to attack. And they roll their attack skill versus the defense of the unit. If they hit, then they roll... Basically, anything they hit is a damage. And at that point, you put down hit tokens. The defender doesn't get to attack back on that round because it's not their turn. They are basically trying to protect themselves and, you know, they get pushed back and stuff. Once combat is done, whether it's melee combat or range, you figure out what your... basically, it's a form of morale, but they call it nerve. And units have nerve ratings. And the attacker will roll 2d6 versus plus any hits they caused. And they then subtract the nerve from that roll. And a banner man will give you extras, and there's a couple of powers and things like that. If you fail, or if you roll higher than a 10, the unit flees. Basically, the unit is lost. It's removed from the field of battle.
Mm-hmm.
There is no rallying at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It is defeated. There's a step in between that, though, where they're unnerved or unsteady. So, pretty straightforward. Terrain is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Range combat is simple. Line of sight is simple. You draw the line of sight from the champion. If the champion can see the other unit, mm-hmm. or even a piece of it, you can hit it. Now, possibly there might be some cover bonuses.
Sure.
And so on. Then they give, just like in Warhammer, but I think in Mantic they really made it amusing sounding. Each of the troops have different powers. And the one that always stands out in my head is Evil Dead. Necromancers and undead have something called Evil Dead.
They'll swallow your soul.
That basically, as they cause damage, they actually lose hit points. Or they gain hit points. They lose the hit point tokens that are on them, therefore building back their nerve. So far, there's only 3 races. The beta download gives you the army list and the rule book. The races are based on good, evil, and neutral. There is no neutral right now. There are 2 good armies. And one thing I really like, this is how they handled allies. If you want allies and they're of your alignment, you can buy them. The only rules they have for, like, controlling what units you have to have is if you have so many basic troops, you have to have, like, a champion. You have to, or a hero or a general.
Sure.
So they limit that. But really, for throwing down a game of that, you could do anything from small skirmishes to large skirmishes. magic is very simple right now. They really only have two true spells. They have a healing, though healing can also be considered like combat medics.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have something called Zap. Zap has different levels of how strong it is, but it includes anything from magic missiles, fireball, so on. If you had some issues with Warhammer rules, I would really recommend looking at the Mantic rules. It would be very easy to modify some of the Warhammer magic, and basically some of the instant kill stuff would just instead cause hit wounds, mm-hmm. things like that. But you could really easily do that. For a beta, I think it's a very good beta. I am very interested in seeing the rule set when it comes out fully. They can do quite a bit with it, and it looks like they'll probably, as more armies come into existence, they'll add more powers. You know, things like that. So, obviously it's free, so you should try it out.
Yep, Mantic Game, Mantic. Yeah, I'll try to put
right.
it back up.
You can get it a couple places. They're plastering it everywhere. They yeah. want people to download it. And you can go out and buy a troop of soldiers, 10 soldiers, for like $14, $15. Mm-hmm. Undead, dwarves, or elves. Or you can use Warhammer figures if you already have them. It doesn't yep. really matter.
They're the same scale.
They're the same scale, and the nice thing is the battles can be any size. If you want to have a quick and dirty, you know, throw down a couple of troops. So I am looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to playing it. And I give it 12 thumbs up.
Yep, 12 thumbs.
Whoa. For now, yeah.
Alrighty. Well, we will be back after this.
There will always be people trapped in intolerable situations. There will always be people who have to hide what they are for fear of persecution. There will always be attempts to suppress a minority. There will always be people in power who are corrupt. There will always be megalomaniacs who want to take control of everything. And the people thought least likely to speak out, least likely to make a difference, always will. The Vajra Enterprises Fiction Podcast, updated every other weekend with stories from the worlds of Vajra Enterprises games, including The Dark and Dangerous City of Fate's Worse than Death, The Magical and Mysterious Tibet, The Cosmological and Ontological Horror of In Dark Alleys, The Post-Apocalyptic Savagery of Kid World, and The Haunted Past of Hoodoo Blues. www.indarkalleys.com
Back and
which I could probably do all night sometime. Sorry,
you can get back all night.
No,
okay. We are back, and today on Random Encounters, we don't have any random encounters because, for obvious reasons, the last 2 weeks our website has been
down
in the ether because of the lovely drama. So,
can I talk about the Talk Like a Pirate Day and the treasure?
Yes, you can talk
real quick. Is it okay?
Pirate Day. It'll be over by the time this episode's out. But
well, I was looking through my wish list of like $200 worth of PDFs, and randomly, one of them, World Builder Generators RPG Toolbox Volume 3, is free. So check your wish list because some of them might be free.
Going now. I actually went and I looked at some of their stuff. It's a nice little sale.
Well, yeah, but I guess there's supposed to be random free stuff.
Yeah. If you look on their website, their little treasure chest now and again, if you just click on that, you get a free item. Get something for free.
And actually, the world builder is pretty fun.
I don't know. This world builder that we were using to make a world tonight was pretty darn good. Or fun, however you want to put it.
Yeah, but, you know... other than that, no, we don't have any random encounters. We will have, hopefully, a segment from Noah. We'll be back with a Munchies for Munchkins segment, which we will play at the end here. And right before we the outro and all that. So, thanks very much, everyone, for listening. The new site, the site is up as of, is back up as of today.
It looks nice. I like
the...
I like the look.
I'm still in the process of getting the old content put back in. People might notice that there are now, no matter where you go on the site, on the right hand side, there is a Support the Gamers Haven line of stuff. Basically, you can donate outright monies to us through PayPal. You can visit Noble Knight Games through our affiliate link, RPG Now through our affiliate link. Go to our Amazon store, or you can even search for something from Amazon through our Amazon store, which we get credit for. Plus, if you are looking for web hosting, there's a even link to GoDaddy.com there. So we appreciate any and all help people can give to us as far as support and all that, because obviously I had to just drop $130 on hosting to get to a new host.
Did the other site ever give you any money back?
The other site is sending me a check for $42, which I think is $20 short, but... there's not much I can do about that right now. Well, there is stuff I can do about it right now, but it's not worth the $20 right now. So, anyway. Yeah. So, those of you not in the know about how InMotion Hosting screwed us, InMotion Hosting screwed us hard on September 1st. So, yeah.
Like a bunch of jagoffs.
Yeah, they are. They are. By the time this gets out, we should be done with the Deadlands game. Enough Room to Die will probably be wrapped up at that point. So, other than that, not much else going on here. I've been incredibly busy with school, as has Nathan, amongst other things. We've all been busy with various things. So, thanks everyone for listening. Stop by the website, gamershavenpodcast.com. Drop us an email at Ethan at GamersHavenPodcast.com will get to me. There's also a contact us section on the site again. You can also hit our forums on the website and drop us a line there. Call our voicemail line, 866. Oh, God. How come I can never remember this? 866. 866. Not even 866. It's 877-416-1270. I should... try to memorize that as best I can because I can never remember it. But leave us a voicemail. Shoot us an MP3, whatever.
Just don't shoot us.
Yeah, just don't shoot us. Comment on stuff on the website too, please. I like how the site's looking now. It's a nice theme. So thanks everyone. I've been saying goodbye for like 15 minutes now.
Goodbye.
Good night all.
Good night.
Munchies for Munchkins. This is Noah with Munchies for Munchkins. Today I'm sitting down with Tracy Barnett, also known as Rolling20s on the forums.
Hey, guys.
And both of us are huge fans of Deadlands and Ethan's Deadlands game. And in honor of the end of Ethan's game, I've decided to pull Tracy in, and we're going to do a look at food for Deadlands. Deadlands, you got to keep in mind, is in America. A lot of immigrants, so a lot of food goes. A lot of it, though, is going to be where you're going to locate that food.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've played some. I mean, besides running that game for Ethan, that can be lovely found in the actual play section of Gamers Haven. Mm-hmm. You've run other Deadlands games, haven't you?
Actually, that was my first Deadlands game session, yeah.
Really? Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's see what you think of this. There's a bunch of stuff that you can do for Deadlands. Looking at like trail foods and stuff, and I know, guys, that we covered some of this in episodes 73, and I'm taking some of the ideas from there when Nathan and I got into a whole chat about this. But trail foods in Deadlands, things like beef jerky, peppered beef jerky, or pemmican, trail mix is great.
Yep, hardtack if you really want to go that far and have the bread that no one can really chew.
Actually, for hardtack one time, and you guys may want to think about this, I actually had a bunch of old gingerbread house kits that went stale.
Perfect.
And so they're really tasty. They're just really, really stiff, stale gingerbread. And and they were like little squares, and it actually worked really well.
The other thing, I mean, there's always there are two classic things whenever I think of like a Western and a group traveling out in the West and they bed down for the night. Mm-hmm. You've got two things that get cooked over the fire. Mm-hmm. Beans and coffee.
And I was absolutely about to get to that. Beans are huge. They can be they can be carried dry. They take a while to cook, but then as everybody's setting up for the night, they do get cooked. Over the fire, it depends on what kind of a cooking kit your crew has with them. Very often they may have, one person may be carrying the nice heavy cast iron Dutch oven. And stews are huge. So,
oh yeah. You grab a rabbit or even a snake or something, mm-hmm. and I mean you basically just butcher it and toss it in there, and once it's all soft enough, you pull the bones out and eat.
Exactly. One thing to keep in mind for also anywhere you are in Deadlands, especially since a lot of land is starting to lie fallow, fruit and vegetables are very hard to come by in Deadlands. I was actually thinking about this earlier. How often do you actually think that you're not going to find things like lettuces and salads unless you're back east in like New York City and maybe even Chicago and some places like that? You're going to find some of the produce and stuff, but not necessarily in other places.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, hold on one sec. But when they do find them, your characters may be able to take some of this with them in the form of preserves.
Mm-hmm.
Preserves were huge in the 1800s. Glass jars and bottles. Canning, not so much. Canning tended to come a bit later. But the preserves were huge. Now, the one thing, of course, you have to keep in mind is that there are glass jars rattling around in your bags.
Right.
So,
and you also have to make sure that you don't get the glass jars of preserves confused with the mad scientist explodey jars.
That could be so much fun.
It really could. There was a story I read online yesterday. Someone was playing a halfling in the campaign who was modeled after Ron Burgundy, and he had from Anchorman, and had like a bandolier of 15 like different vials, mm-hmm. but he had no idea what was in them because he didn't mark them.
Nice.
So he would just pull them at random. He had a table or something he would roll on, but like
that's awesome.
The barbarian a healing what he thought was a healing potion, and it was a love file. Or there was an alchemist fire was something else. So, I mean, you could have the same type of confusion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it could be a lot of fun.
So, again, keep in mind, and for around the gaming table, I mean, this kind of thing is great and easy to do. If you're going to buy beef jerky, and not make it yourself, beef jerky is not that hard to make, but can be time-consuming, though you can find some good recipes online. If you're going to buy beef jerky, just be very aware that a lot of beef jerkies out there contain a lot of MSG, and I know a lot of my wife and her family are all allergic to this, so it's something to keep in mind out there, guys. Just be aware of what you're feeding people.
Yeah, the food allergy thing is something to be aware of at all.
Always. If you want to get the feel of that around-the-campfire bean stew, here's a good recipe. Take 2 cans of baked beans, 6 hot dogs, cut up the hot dogs into about half inch to 1 inch pieces, dump them in the beans, and you're going to want to add some, whatever you can really get. A bunch of spices is good, a little bit of ketchup, a little bit of mustard, some hot sauce, and the secret ingredient for a real authentic cowboy stew is something called liquid smoke. If you can find it, you're going to want to go for the mesquite, not the hickory. It's the mesquite's a little bit sweeter. And just a couple drops of that into this, and you will really get a great, great cowboy stew out of that.
Yeah, and if you're a lucky group that can actually, you know, take a session and maybe go to a campsite or go mm-hmm. to, you know, a park of some kind, mm-hmm. and you can actually make that kind of stew, then, I mean, you don't even need the liquid smoke at that point in time because the smoke from the fire is going to provide all of that. But, I mean, that's one of those special gaming.
Yeah, events. I mean, that's if you can find a good, I know we've got a nice little reservation out here where you can mm-hmm. go outdoor cooking. But, again, that also can be difficult because outdoor gaming can always be difficult because the second the wind blows, everybody's character sheets go everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. So there's a good recipe for you guys. I will actually repost that recipe online in the forums. So let's also move on a little bit and let's look at what's going to be available in the saloons.
Saloon, whiskey, and whiskey.
Well, yeah, but you also end up with a lot of some similar foods to what you would find in like medieval style taverns. They're gonna have, you know, either a stew that night, a roast, maybe a soup, and maybe some bread. You know, it's gonna be very, very basic fare. But there's something to be said for that. And all of these are fairly easy to integrate into your gaming table. And if you're gonna be serving stuff like this, again, it's actually not that hard and not that expensive to find a good weight, you know, like a piece of eye round roast it up a little bit, and split the cost with everybody, you're still going to only end up paying about $3 or $4 a person.
Yeah, the thing that I think about, you can take almost any town out west, and you're going to see one type of animal ubiquitously because they'll live damn near anywhere,
mm-hmm.
And that's a chicken.
Well, chicken's true. You're also going to find thinking Midwest, you're also going to find a lot of buffalo meat and a lot of rabbit.
Yeah, very
true. Now, here's, so, you know, that's the generic food you're going to find in a lot of it. But there's two areas that I would like to point out that, you know, people don't necessarily think about. Out in California, if you read the Deadlands lore,
mm-hmm.
Deadlands, California is very heavily populated by Chinese.
I was thinking about that earlier. You're going to have that regional variation.
So,
yes.
So, I mean, if you've got your characters out there in, you know, in California, which is actually where my characters are in the Hell Hath No Fury game right now, you're gonna, you know, go do a Chinese food night. Do, you know, mushu vegetables, some lo mein, and some basic stuff. Because why, you know, very often that's what they would serve to the outsiders. You know, they wouldn't serve, you know, General Tso's chicken was invented, you know, a lot later. Get what you want, of course, but the mushu and the, like, egg foo young and stuff was Chinese food that was created for the American palate.
Yeah, chop suey as well.
Chop suey, that's the other one I was trying to think of. Yeah, which is, you know, it's all just, you know, and a lot of those dishes can be really, really tasty. They're just not necessarily authentic Chinese food.
The other thing, if your group is going to get sort of invited back to like one of the triad strongholds or whatever, mm-hmm. like one of the warlords areas, you're going to have more authentic Chinese food. And I would imagine, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Noah, that you would have a lot of the spicier dishes.
That's right.
Because it helps cover the taste of tainted meat and all that.
Well, so meat, the thing you have to remember is that in Chinese cuisine, meat's actually a more, a Western addition to Chinese food. Even in the form of chicken, you find maybe a lot of fish and you're going to find a lot of tofu, is how they get their protein base. You know, beef and chicken and pork, those were really all a lot of later additions to the cuisine base. If you happen to run into Japanese people, especially, Japanese people did not eat beef or chicken or pork for a very, very long time. It didn't become a standard until the Americans came in and started integrating a lot of that into it.
Well, yeah, that's really interesting as well. You mentioned the seafood. You know, I just got back recently from a vacation on the East Coast, and we had some great seafood. But imagine what it would be like around Los Angeles or San Fran, you know, in California in Deadlands, where you've got the maze and you've got all these creepy, monstery things. I mean, you think people aren't going to hunt something for food? So you could make a seafood-based Chinese food dish, and during that meeting with the warlord, they're served this meal, and they begin eating it, and it tastes wonderful, and then they find out that it's sea serpent.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just it's a little twist, and obviously, I mean, you know, your local market has a hard time stocking sea serpent.
Well, the sea serpent, yes, but if you go to your local Chinese shop and you look into how to prepare it, always look into how to prepare it. You can find things like eel.
Mm-hmm.
In your local Chinese markets or Asian markets, you can also find a lot of the time pre-cooked barbecue eel, which is really, really tasty, and all you really need to do is throw a little bit more barbecue sauce on it and throw it in the oven for a little bit. So that's California. So let me test your Deadlands knowledge, Tracy. What do you think would be the one other area that would have a different, specifically ethnic food?
I go to the Southwest for sure.
Southwest somewhat, but specifically where?
I would be thinking Texas.
And what would you get?
You would get Tex-Mex slash
right.
Mexican food
exactly.
right on the border there, because that's where that started. So, I mean,
absolutely.
You're going to have your chilies that don't have beans in them because it's chili con carne. Mm-hmm. You're going to have barbecue of a sort because...
You're also going to be looking at a lot of the enchiladas and the taquitos and a lot of, you know, ethnically traditional, pardon the term, Taco Bell style foods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, that kind of stuff, you mentioned Taco Bell, if you are on a budget...
yeah.
But, I mean, it's not great necessarily, but that's the... I mean, you can emulate that really, really quickly just
yes,
by going to Taco Bell.
Absolutely, and if you are on a time crunch, absolutely, and if you are on a budget crunch and not so much a time crunch, I will actually post my recipe for taco meat up there on the Gamers Haven... you know what I'm talking about.
The forums.
The forums, yes, that's the word.
Places where we type them things for them people.
Right. I will put up my taco meat recipe, and, you know, you can find some good, cheap ground beef. I even do it with cheap frozen hamburgers.
Oh, yeah.
And you can find some good stuff, and that'll work really well for you guys. So, you know, there it is, guys. There's your basics of Deadlands cuisine. I mean, we could keep going on for hours, but I think we're already hitting close to the 15-minute mark, and Ethan will kill me if we go too much longer. So, all right, guys. Thank you, Tracy. I actually think I would love to have you back again for whenever we do the next Munchies for Munchkins. This is Noah, Tracy, and this has been Munchies for Munchkins for episode 74 of the Gamers Haven podcast. Have a good day, guys.
Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
that's not canon.